It is as much as to tell him, Lord, I am quite willing to believe what you say, but only insofar as I understand. As though faith were not what it is, the obedience of a created mind, humbly submitting its ability to understand before the uncreated mind of the Lord of the universe. He wants this humble submission from His creatures and will be satisfied with nothing less. So much for saying that to believe in God means to accept His mysteries. But believing in God means also practicing what we believe. It was not a casual remark that Christ made when He gave the last instructions to His disciples before He ascended into heaven. He told them to go into the whole world and preach the gospel to all nations, teaching them to observe all the commandments that I have given you. The stress is on commandments and that I have given you. In other words, Christ came on earth to reveal mysteries that were hidden from the foundation of the world. True enough. But Christ was no Socrates, no Plato, or Aristotle. He never used a single syllogism. He never argued. He never published. In a word, Christ was no mere philosopher. He came to teach mysteries, and as God demands of His believers that they know when to stop and tell their reason so far and no further beyond this are the hidden precincts of God. However, it was not only to give us mysteries that by accepting them we might show our humble submission of mind to the infinite mind of God. In other words, Christ's purpose in giving us mysteries was not only or finally that we might accept them and think about them, talk about them, give lectures or write books about their hidden and abstruse theological implications. Christ revealed the mysteries in order that those who believe and accept them might put these mysteries into practice. It is in doing what God has revealed that authentic Christianity is identified, which being interpreted says that the faith is not only a submission of the mind to God's revealed truth, it is also the surrender of the human will to God's revealed commands. Gnosticism, which is cerebral Christianity, invaded the church already in the first century, and one of the main reasons for the fourth gospel was John's intention to combat that heresy back there. It is the heresy of intellectualism which defines the Christian faith. In other words, circumscribes it in terms of mental speculation. The Gnostics were answered by John, but they never died out. We have them with us today, and their number is legion. Latter-day Gnosticism curiously claims that a person is saved by what he knows rather than by what he does. True Christianity does not deny the value of reflective knowledge on the faith, nor of intelligent theological reflection, but it insists that is not enough. The faith must not only be reflected on, it must be lived. It must be exercised in the practice of the virtues of charity for God, shown in loving even one's enemies, of trust in God, shown in accepting life's reverses as so many gifts from a loving providence, of struggle with one's own weakness, shown in carrying the heaviest cross we have, ourselves, and doing so joyfully, because we know, that is, we believe, that those who persevere to the end will be saved. Thank you for listening.
I suppose you will mention it, but the light of the Holy Spirit comes into the very much to enable us to do this. I suppose you'll come to that later on. That is an essential part. In other words, the help, the light of the Holy Spirit for believing?
Yes. Undoubtedly, the light of the Holy Spirit is indispensable for faith. The reason, however, why I placed the stress where I did on the human side was that I was speaking within the context of Christian pedagogy. In other words, provided the human heart is well disposed, and that means in the moral order, God will never be wanting with His grace. But what is very practically important for parents and teachers to realize is that in explaining the faith to others, those who are being taught recognize that this faith requires something on their part, a preparation, in order to convince themselves the faith is not mere credulity, that it requires on their part a humble submission of their minds, and that above all, this faith is not something which you wear, but something which you must do. Objectively, Father, there's no question about it. There are two agents that finally constitute divine faith. Divine grace and man's cooperation. Of these two, the more important, the more fundamental, without whom human cooperation is impossible, is grace. But I transmitted that not because it is not important, indeed more important, but because we can assume that God will do His part, provided we do ours. And I wish to stress what is our part here in understanding what faith is.
Father, you talk about faith, which is believing. Are we still bound to believe all the truths which the Holy Catholic Church teaches?
Yes, we are still bound and shall remain so bound as long as there is a Catholic Church, which Christ assures us will be until the end of time. However, I think it is worth distinguishing that question. First, on its negative side, there are those, and I tried to somehow address myself to that mentality last week. There are those who are saying that there really is no such thing as a deposit of faith. In other words, that there was not, until the end of the Apostolic Age, a body of truths which Christ and the Apostles communicated to the world. But, so these people say, it's an ongoing revelation, which is part of that process. Remember, process theology we spoke of last week. Well, quite clearly, this is on the negative side to that question. If a hypothesis which is contrary to the faith that we're talking about, if the hypothesis were true, that the Church had not received, and we use the pluperfect tense, which means something finished in the past, had the Church had received from her Master the truths that then she is to communicate to the world until the end of time, but that new truths are somehow welling up from the sub or unconscious in the human spirit, especially the collective human spirit, well, it's quite possible then that, even then it would be difficult to see how God would contradict Himself. But then, no doubt on that hypothesis, there could well be new revelations which might at least seem to contradict the established deposit of faith. However, once we accept the premise that there is a deposit of faith. Now, the word is not the best, but what it means is there is a once-for-allness about what Christ gave to His church. And that this revelation is no longer added to, obviously, never subtracted from, but that the church's unique mission in the world is to preserve that revelation, explain and clarify its meaning down the ages, and apply the interpretation to all the contingencies of place and time as long as the human race is in existence. Consequently, even on the first level, but certainly on the second, which is part of Catholic teaching, there can be no question but that we are now, as our forebears were, as Catholics expected to accept whatever the Catholic Church teaches on the prior assumption that Christ entrusted uniquely to the Church the revelation which He first gave to the apostles during His stay on earth.
This tape was produced by Select Religious Recordings. All rights are reserved. Duplication or transcription in any form is strictly prohibited.